You're on the street. This was the street that we would have walked on 2,000 years ago. Right? In the year 10 of the Common Era, 14 years after Herod died, right? The temple is standing. The ritual is taking place. Is he coming back this way?
Sounds like.
Okay, move in. Move in.
Sounds like.
Isn't it?
He is coming.
Yeah, he's coming.
10 of the Common Era. Let's say this group decided to come for the holiday of the first fruits, Sukkot, right? When we build those little booths and talk about harvest. So you come here. Maybe you live in the north. So you came in through Damascus Gate, which was probably standing at that time. It's much further north. And you walked along this street, right here. You pass the Antonia Fortress. This is the last corner of it, the furthest northern corner. And you were awed by the size of it, and immediately you saw the magnificence of the Herodian walls, and you were really overcome. The street is actually wider than where we were standing. You had your kids with you. It was very nice. You know, it was a holiday. You came here, and there was water. How do we know there was water? Two reasons. One is that when you were at, just when before you came in, there was like a half column. Uh-huh. It was actually the fence around a water reservoir. We're not sure where that water came from. But in Josephus, he talks about the Antonia having cuts in the side of the bedrock that allowed the rainwater to flow off. They didn't want it to collect in the courtyard of the fortress, so the rainwater ran off. It probably went under the street where we're standing and collected in that pool. So everybody had a cool, refreshing drink. It was wonderful. Thank you very much. And they continued down to one of the gates, to one of the shops. They bought their offering, wine, oil, whatever it was, and they went to the temple to pray. The street stood through the death of Herod, right, in the year 6. It stood until 10 when we're here. His son is ruling, but he's been downgraded to the role of ethnarch. That means he's not really the king anymore, because the Romans are more in control. And finally, you come to the time of Jesus, who walked in Jerusalem, who may have walked here if he came to the north side of Jerusalem for some function. And then you have that period between the life and death of Jesus, sometime after 33, until the year 66, in which the pot begins to boil. The Judeans want to be free. They want to have their independence. They don't want to pay taxes. They don't want to go into the army. And so you have this movement that grows and grows until in Caesarea in the year 66, there is a massive revolt against taxation, and the war, the great revolt, begins. It spreads to the north, it spreads to the south, and ultimately it comes to Jerusalem. And in August of the year 70, the Romans are camped all around, and the defenders are in charge of the Temple Mount in the Antonia, on the Temple Mount, and on the Western Hill. The Romans try three times, coming from the north. We know from Jeremiah, the north is always the most vulnerable. And that's exactly the way they choose to come. Twice we repulse them. On the third attempt, they come in. They begin day by day to move across the Temple Mount, and on the 9th of Av, the whole mountain is aflame. How do you burn these stones? How do you burn these huge blocks? Right? 50 tons. They're huge. It's overwhelming. Well, the same water that collects undoes the Temple Mount. If you put enough burning material in front of the stones, you will create a very simple high school lab experiment, right? The water inside the stove will boil. And when it boils, it turns to steam, and the steam expands, and the stones crumble. They literally crumble. They become powder. So when Josephus writes that it's a sea of flame and an ocean of blood, and that the sound of the exploding stones deafens people for days afterwards, you can only begin to imagine the horror of that Roman devastation of the city of Jerusalem. All of the stones fall onto the street, and the streets build up. And when Hadrian conquers the city in 135 and rebuilds it, he takes pieces of marble columns from the Temple Mount and sets them up here to make a street again as they walk by, because on the top he has a pagan altar. And then along come the Roman, Christians who want to build close by. So they use this, they fill it in, and they build on top, and then the Muslims build on top. And then the Crusaders build on top. And then the Mamelukes build on top. And up there, you have a Turkish structure that's holding up a house where they're probably just getting up and going to make their morning coffee.
Is it true then Titus didn't want to burn Jerusalem, but their soldiers wanted?
They were so fed up with the resistance of the Judeans, so fed up with it. They had never seen a force that had not capitulated to the Roman legion. Mm-hmm. And even though Titus told them not to do it, they did. And when he heard, according to Josephus, he was upset because he felt that it had created a situation that he no longer could control.
So it was not a beautifying of Titus by Josephus.
No.
It was true.
No, it's true. No. Titus was a very interesting one. He probably would not have had the Arch of Titus if it had been another emperor, you know, a crazy one like Caligula or Nero or others. In any case, we are now at the end of Mount Moriah. And it was here that they ran into this water channel. And that's what we're going to do now. We're going to walk through the Maccabean water channel all the way to the Struthian pools, and that will be our next stop. Okay? Ready?